Hi again, folks, and welcome back to NTI's Japan Real Estate Podcast. I'm your host, Ziv Nakajima again. Thanks for joining us today, and a big thank you to all of you who joined us for our webinar last night. It was great talking shop with you all. Some really good questions were asked and answered, and we actually managed to stick to the schedule, for which I'm very proud of myself, to be honest. Unfortunately, however, and this time I swear it isn't my fault, the webinar software had some issues about 20 minutes in, kicked all participants out, and although it then let everyone log in again, and it claimed that it was recording again, that didn't actually happen beyond that point, which I only found out at the very end, of course. But have no fear, I'm currently in the process of re-recording my narration, and I will put it together with a screen capture of the presentation and files, and the internet website we looked at, etc. And the participants really only typed in questions in any case. I don't actually allow them to speak during the webinar. I'm a tyrant like that. So most of these questions are written down, and I should be able to recreate the entire webinar for you. And I will have it published and ready for viewing and listening next week, I hope. So no harm done. And now that I'll also know how to actually use that screen capture software properly myself, we won't be relying on the webinar cloud software for recording it next time. So things are getting smoother, and just takes a bit of time and practice for me to get there. So apologies again for the delay, and thank you for bearing with me. Okay, so as promised last week, we've got another interview for you today. Again, on the buyer's agent scheme topic, theme. This time, it's actually our first time interviewing an existing client. So not a recording of a business call with a potential client, but an actual firsthand account of people who've actually pulled the trigger, purchased some properties, and started building their portfolio here in Japan. And in this case, through us, a buyer's agent, and they spoke to me about their own personal history, their investment journey, and just their own experience, not just here in Japan, but investing in other places as well. So a really fascinating conversation, I thought at least. And to be honest, this particular couple, Mira and Julian, are actually among our favorite clients, not just because they're lovely people, which you'll probably be able to hear yourselves, but also because they make cool-headed, logical decisions. They know how to evaluate risk and deal with it very well. Hardly any guidance from us required with them, except, of course, on particular topics related to the specific market here in Japan. And, you know, due diligence practices on Japanese properties that we recommend and so forth. But aside from that, they're really just a pleasure to work with. So here's a recording of our conversation from a couple of weeks ago. Enjoy, and I'll see you again on the other side. Okay, Mira, Julian, thank you so much for joining us today. It's great having you on the show.
Thanks for having us.
Yes, that's great.
So before we actually talk business and property and all of that, can you maybe tell our listeners a little bit about your own personal stories? Like, where are you from originally? Where are you living now? Maybe how you met, if you don't mind, and, you know, what you're doing in life aside from property investment, that kind of thing?
Yeah, so my name is Julian. I'm from France originally, but I've lived and worked overseas for about 20 years. So the US, the UK for a little while, Japan for about 3 years, Australia for 10 years. And it's been fairly bit the last 5 years in between Germany and Australia. And then actually since last year, we've been living in Austria, in Vienna, where I work at the university there.
And my name is Mira. I'm what they call Indonesian-born Chinese, if that makes sense. But I left Indonesia many years ago for study and then for work. So I have lived in Singapore, Australia, US, Japan, and then finally became Australian citizen about 8 years ago. I also live in Germany with Julian, but only for a year, and then back to Sydney for work. So we alternated between the two countries for a while. And I rejoined him in Austria last year. And to answer your question, we met in Sydney.
Actually, yeah.
Oh, okay. So you're basically global grasshoppers. Cool.
Global
okay.
Citizens, yes.
Okay, so Austria, I've only ever visited Austria once. Oh, no, maybe twice, I think. And I don't remember much aside from really good desserts. And I'm guessing probably many of our listeners are probably not very familiar with the country as well. So maybe can you tell us a little bit about what it's like living in Austria? I mean, obviously, in normal days, not now, but actually also if you could delve into how things are looking there now.
Austria is it's pretty good generally. I like the people, they're very friendly, and life is let's say a little bit more affordable than places like Sydney, Australia. So Vienna is definitely one of the best European capital that you'd have. So again, as attractive as other European capitals, but life is a lot cheaper, like, London than better than London or Paris or Berlin. So I find it's a very easy place to adapt to. The people, as I said, very friendly. It's close to the Alps, it's close to Tyrol. So if you're into skiing or, you know, mountain climbing and all these sorts of things, it's a very cool place to live. And you're also right in the center of Europe, so you can fly anywhere you want within 2 or 3 hours. So, you know, when we lived in Sydney, it took forever to fly somewhere. And here that you're in Vienna, you can just be anywhere you want, so in no time. So it's really cool. At the moment, I suppose we're entering in our fifth or our 6 week of confinement. Actually, we sort of lost track of time. So it's a bit, life is rather different, let's say. But it's not been too bad because the government was very proactive and acted very quickly to take the right measures. So we've been confined, stuck at home, trying to work there, going out as little as possible. But I think life will soon return to normal. The shops are beginning to just reopen slowly. So hopefully in a matter of, let's say, a few weeks or a couple of months, we should be back to life as normal. And you could come and visit us anytime you want, especially when summer comes.
Oh, man, the amount of places that I've got on my bucket list now, it seems like the more you stay at home, the more you want to get out, right?
Yes.
That's right.
Okay, so you're both, in normal times, you're both employed, you're working, hopefully making, you know, reasonable, comfortable salaries. So how did you get around to deciding to invest in the first place? And then how did you end up... setting your sights on real estate generally and on Japan specifically?
Yeah, well, we kind of got into property investment a little bit by chance, to be honest. So it's not something we had planned for in the first place. We lived in Sydney for a long time and we saved up money to buy a property. And then you just know what it's like in Sydney. Just prices kept rising and rising over the last 15 years.
Oh, God, yeah.
And in the end, we kind of thought, well, we're never going to buy anything, or we're never going to afford to buy something decent. So we kind of stayed out of the property market and just amassed a lot of capital on the side to invest for another day. And long story short, we happened to be in Athens. I go to Athens in Greece regularly for work. And we, in 2018, we had the opportunity of buying an apartment there in central Athens, very closely, not far from the Parthenon. And it was a bargain, 65,000 euro at the time. So I think in USD, that was about $80,000, $106,000, about $100K AUD. And so we had the opportunity, we bought it, we snatched it from the market actually. And we've been renting it as short term for, let's say, holidaymakers or professionals who work in Athens. And that's giving us quite a good return, 7 or 8% on average if we have a good year. So it's much better than any kind of investment, you know, you'd find out there. And it's a tangible asset for us. Very little volatility is likely to gain some value on the long term and provides you with rental income. So it's been perfect for us. But I suppose that was kind of an eye-opener because... it got us thinking a lot about our financial goals and our life objectives, and especially about developing what, you know, a lot of people talk about financial independence or financial resilience. And so our professional sort of background, we're very exposed to government policies and government spending. So I depend on a lot of research funding. Mira depends on infrastructure development. So it was a good opportunity for us to have a bit of a sort of extra source of income on the side that can, you know, provide you with added income when things are not as good. And it's also, when we've gone through economic crisis. So, I mean, for instance, Mira's experienced the 1998 Asian financial crisis. Of course, the GFC, we had to survive this. Was in Greece when they had the major euro crisis, so I saw the devastating effects of that. And of course now we have the coronavirus upon us, and that's going to have enormous impact. So it got us all thinking, you know, hard and long about what's the best possible way to not only preserve our capital but also grow it and expand on the long term. And you know, looking at different available asset classes, it's kind of like, well, if you can get into real estate, have a good piece of real estate in a good location, you know, bringing relatively stable income, that's definitely an asset you want to own. And yeah, and then we got into the Japanese public market, I suppose, because we found it particularly attractive, and it's the second largest property market in the world. And of course, Japan is, I think, it's one of the most civilized countries in the world.
I agree.
You know, very stable politically, very secure, I mean, very crime safe. So, and the property is really giving you a much better yield than what you'd find in Europe or let alone Australia. I don't know if you can get any yield out of properties in Australia. So it's just very attractive market, and that's been, you know, on the whole, it's comparatively, it's a low risk, a high return kind of investment for us. So that's that, our investment strategy, I suppose, in a nutshell. We're not trying to, you know, become super duper rich. It's just preserving what we've earned, what we've saved on the side, and just being wise and safe with it. And, you know, getting in property is just it's just one of the wise things you have to do.
And that's I think that's definitely the way to go. And we can see that these days, right? It's so easy to see now how planning ahead, not just for alternative income streams, but also just to have any kind of savings put aside, you know, from any source.
Yes. And that's not dependent on the market crashing or anything, you know. That's like, it's stable income, but it's stable property too. So tangible asset, I mean.
Okay, so for Japan real estate specifically, what's your general strategy there? What were you looking for? What was your game plan, so to speak, portfolio structuring wise?
Yeah, well, so when we decided to get into property investment, we had no sight on Japan at first. So we've lived in Japan in Kansai area between 2004 and 2007. And actually, assumption was always that Japanese real estate was just out of reach. It's just too expensive for us. You know, it was, we were stuck in the bubble mindset of Tokyo being, you know, crazy prices. But so we thought we'd invest in Southeast Asia. And we looked around and we couldn't find anything that was really worth investing into. Then, as Mira was doing some research, she came upon a blog by your marketing manager, Pretty Donnelly.
Oh, yeah.
And,
RE Talk Asia, that's where we found you.
Okay.
Yeah, so then we turned to, we looked at your website, we looked into the property deals you had online, and I was actually, sort of the how affordable the deals were, and as we looked into it a bit more, then it just became clear that for us that was, you know, one of the best opportunities that that was in front of us, and we just couldn't believe this, how long, you know, that we'd missed it for so long. It was just so obvious. So then we thought, well, based on our available budget, we'd focus on, you know, buying 1R or 1K apartments, so it's generally, you know, small single room units of 16 to 20 square meters, and that already tenanted and just delivering you a good yield, so stable income, 6 to 8% net pre-tax, I suppose. And at this stage, so we're not really interested in buying, you know, houses or condos or even commercial properties or car parks. It's just, you know, the average, the reliable Japanese cash cars or units. That's what we're focusing in, and, you know, we're just going to grow the property portfolio progressively, just buying, you know, one or two properties at a time, and then, you know, letting that the investment compound over time and gathering more rental income, buying more properties, and so on. So when you interview us in 10 years time, we'll have you know, 10 to 20 properties, hopefully.
You're joking, but that's what a lot of our customers actually look like these days, the ones that started when we started.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
so and any specific reason why you ended up working through us? Because we're a buyer's agent. I mean, why didn't you work directly, say, with a local Tokyo realtor or somebody, one of the big brokerages who cover all of the country, that sort of thing?
Well, put it simply, you're probably the best at this. So that's
how.
No, But seriously, when we first contacted you in, so that was already September 2019, so it's about 6 months' time, a bit longer than that. You just pretty was very quick to respond to us and put us in touch with you, and you just answered all our questions, you know, very effectively and very professionally. So that kind of gave us a sort of a reassurance that, you know, you knew what you were doing and you were reliable people out there, which is, you know, when you find people on the internet, that's the first thing you have to assess and determine, are these people the real deal or not?
Yeah.
And then you organized a little investment tour for us in Fukuoka and Kumamoto. So in November of last year, so we had a bit of, you had the opportunity to meet you and your partners. And it was, again, that was, you made it obvious to us that it's just very difficult when you're a foreigner, especially non-resident Japan, to actually get into the market. Even though we speak a little bit Japanese, we're not going to deal with local realtors and, you know, go look for properties. We don't have that, the time or the expertise. And really, to do all the paperwork and the due diligence for every purchase, you know, that's just impossible for us. So that's why it was very obvious that if we were going to move, you know, into this market, we needed the help of people like you. And as we said, as I said, you know, when we met you in November, you sounded so professional and knowledgeable about, and on top of everything on the market, that you were just the obvious choice. You know, look no further.
That's really flattering, guys. Thank you.
And also, last thing, you give us access to the whole of Japan, not just, you know, if you go with one realtor, you can be stuck, for instance, where that realtor is perhaps located. So maybe Tokyo or Osaka, and you have access to properties, you know, all over Japan. So that's also an added plus. Well,
yep. Okay. So speaking of the nationwide approach, how do you actually pick your locations? Is there any particular criteria that you look at before deciding on a location, or do you have a list that you came up with beforehand, or how do you actually pick the spots?
Well, it's actually easy to answer. We just let our budget decide for us.
Right.
So at first, it was clear that based on the available funds we had, you know, we wouldn't go straight. Well, we could have gone to Tokyo or Kansai area, but we wouldn't have been able to buy as many properties as we wanted to. So we thought we'd start with properties in, you know, 4 or 5 million range in Fukuoka or perhaps Nagoya. And actually, a year before, we'd been to Fukuoka and we really liked the city. Now, we lived in Kyoto before and we'd been in, you know, almost all the major cities in Japan, but Fukuoka really stood out for us. It's just, it's dynamic, it's friendly, you know, the economics and demographics are just, you know, positive and growing. So it's attracting a lot of young professionals and tourists. So it was just an obvious place to, you know, start investing.
Yeah, you're preaching to the choir there.
Yeah. And it was not going to, you know, cost us as much as Tokyo area or Osaka. But we also be interested in Nagoya, because Nagoya is between Tokyo and Osaka, and it's on a busy Shinkansen line. And what they're going to build, the future maglev, so a levitating train, I think.
Yes.
And so that too has a good economic and demographic outlook. So in terms of risk and price affordability, it's a pretty good opportunity. And of course, we want to diversify the portfolios. You know, it's not about just being in one place, all in Fukuoka. Ideally, we'd like to have, you know, properties in every major city in Japan. So if there's an earthquake somewhere, at least, you know, you don't get your whole portfolio wiped out, or even though you're insured, you know, you never know what could happen.
Okay, and I guess that's probably another reason for not going for specifically Tokyo or Osaka, doesn't it? I mean, your buck only goes so far there, is one or two properties as opposed to five or six elsewhere, right?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe, could you tell the listeners a bit, don't be too specific if you don't want to, but the kinds of properties that you've purchased so far and what you're looking at for future purposes, just the profiles?
Yeah. So far we've bought three properties. So that was for a total budget of about 16 million yen, 1.6 million yen. And so it's two in Fukuoka, one in Tokyo. And generally, they're 1 hour, 1K studios that give out between 6 to 8% net yield before tax.
And just for, sorry, just for listeners who are not familiar, somebody who's not living in Japan, 16 million yen is about 150,000 US, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so, to, what did I say? To in Fukuoka, one in Tokyo. And I think one of the deals you did for you did a deal analysis back in November or December, I think, on one of the podcasts for the units in Fukuoka. So we're pretty pleased with that. It's located in Tianjin, so it's pretty central area in Fukuoka, and it's very good public access to public transports and local shops. So it's a winner in terms of location. And it's got good rental income, even though at the moment it's under a sublease agreement until June next year, I think. But, you know, we're going to end that sublease and then we'll perhaps try to do some monthly rent or rents that go on a monthly basis. So that should improve the sort of the overall yield. The other unit was also is a bit less central in Fukuoka, but it's within good walking distance from a train station and it's a slightly bigger place. Had a nice setup with a big balcony on a rooftop and, you know, in a popular but more quieter residential area. And that's a slightly higher yield, 7.8%, I think. So the first one was bought for 3.5 million and the second one for 4.5 million. So I'm not sure the current exchange rate, what that
translates into. About 100, I think. So 35, 45, let's say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the other one is a Tokyo property, and that's a whole story in itself. Which it was interesting because maybe some of the listeners are actually on your mailing list, so they may remember that when was this back in February you sent a deal alert for a very high yield property in the center of Tokyo, and that was the 1K unit, a very popular residential area in Suginami.
Yeah, Shinjuku, isn't it?
Yep.
Yeah, with a yield of 6.6%. So I think it was 6.4 million yen. So at the time, perhaps 60,000 or 70,000. Is that correct?
Yep.
Yeah. And so it was interesting. I was at work when I saw that email. So I jumped up my seat thinking, wow, it's unbelievable. You know, 6% central Tokyo. Just couldn't believe and wanted to, you know, jump straight on it. But the problem was, a day or two before, we had actually just made an offer for another property in Nagoya, which turned out to be a much less attractive deal, but we hadn't heard from it, so we didn't want to commit to sort of like two deals at the same time. So we didn't go for the Tokyo one, but that evening we were kind of kicking ourselves thinking, why did we submit this offer for the Nagoya property, you know, now that this Tokyo one is available?
Mm.
And we were a bit miffed, but I suspect when you sent this email, it was actually very late in Japan. So most of the Australians, perhaps the North Americans, had already gone to bed or were
still sleeping in America, yeah.
And but we didn't do anything on it. We just went to bed just if that we couldn't, you know, make an offer on this deal. And the funny thing is, the following morning, I had to get up very early to go to Germany. And I woke up in the middle of the night, and I never checked my phone in the middle of the night, but I went to the toilets this time. And when I came back, I thought I'd better check my phone just to make sure, you know, just to check how many hours I've got left to sleep. And then there you go, you actually texted me in the middle of the night asking whether we had seen that property available in that property in Tokyo and whether we were interested. So I was like, yeah, sure, you know, at 3 a.m. in the morning, I started texting you back with you, and then sure. And then, long story short, we got out of the offer we made for Nagoya, applied for this one in Tokyo, just because it was the same agent, so we could do that. Normally, you cannot really do that. Nira was still sleeping, so, you know, totally oblivious to the fact. And then when she woke up in the following morning, I said, no, congratulations, you just bought your first unit in Tokyo. That was a bit of a surprise, but yeah, it's been our investment story so far in Japan. Pretty happy with what we've got, but you know, when you've got one or two under your belt, you always want to get more. So now we're setting our sights on properties in Nagoya or Tokyo, Osaka, see if we can get good deals. And now that the Olympics have been postponed, so maybe some opportunities will open up. Yeah. But it's a matter, we're waiting for your next email, Ziv.
Yeah, I'll try to send it in the data or Austria daytime at least.
Yes, yeah, the next new deal, super deal alerts for Tokyo, Osaka, we'll be on top of that.
We'll do that.
Yeah.
Okay, and have you bought them all in cash, or are you?
Yes. So far it's all been cash. We've looked at financing possibilities with several dealers, lenders in Hong Kong and Singapore, but it's a bit challenging, I suppose, for foreigners at this stage still. And we're not too sure with the way this coronavirus is going, whether that's actually a good idea to borrow money on top of it. So for the moment, it's good to go cash. We'll see down the track if we can, you know, borrow and sort of get our cash go further. But just wait and see for the moment. And when things get a bit better, then perhaps we'll try to do that too.
Yeah. And also financing, like you were saying, financing is still more challenging than it is in other countries, at least. But at least we've got the options now, right? Like 2-3 years ago, unless you were a long-term resident here, or, you know, maybe based in China or Hong Kong, or if, you know, if you're super rich or you're presenting a family office, then you could get finance. But otherwise, there weren't any options available at all. So
yeah,
it is getting better. Okay. And aside from financing, which is still a bit of a challenge, what are some of the other challenges, or not even challenges, just things that maybe you're not used to from other countries that are unusual here in Japan that you've run across during this investment journey?
Yeah, well, I suppose for a Westerner, you know, everything is kind of challenging and different and unique in Japan. So, you know, it's just a normal procedure here. But I suppose that's less so for Mira, of course, because she's Asian. The good thing for us is we'd lived in Japan before, so we kind of understand the culture, we kind of know what to expect, how Japanese people communicate and so on. So it's been a bit easier for us to sort of adapt to this, but nonetheless, it's I found it quite difficult. It's the Japanese property market sort of works slightly differently from, let's say, you know, your normal Western's market. And it's really in terms of tenants' expectations. I mean, for me, I would go for a much bigger place, but, you know, with totally different locations. But of course, the Japanese tenants, they want something super central. They don't care so much about the size of it all and so on. So it was just, you know, learning and adjusting to sort of expectations of the Japanese tenants. But and it was doing a bit of research for us. So you thankfully have a lot of very good resources on your website, and I think you published ebook as well. So we went through this, and that helped us sort of wrap our head around, you know, how it works in Japan.
Yeah, if I can just emphasize, it's really important to keep an open mind when it comes to Japanese investment. I think on the positive side, the Japanese tenants are more manageable. They are more compliant, well, relatively speaking. So probably they are less likely to make problems. But having said that, they can also be quite sensitive. So, for example, dealing with the foreign landlords may be quite a daunting experience for them. But also, they may not be happy with changes, like if you make changes to the lease terms and conditions or suddenly raise the rent when the lease is up. And I think they are averse to changes.
Yeah, they just move out if you do that.
Yeah.
Okay.
You learn the hard way, don't you?
Yeah, I'll tell you about it. Okay, so I guess before we let you go, do you have any maybe more general just tips, you know, words of wisdom, advice to anyone considering investing here in Japan for the first, actually not even in Japan, anywhere in the world. Imagine there's someone listening now, and there's definitely a few of those, who's sitting on the fence. They're not sure if and when and what they're going to invest in for the very first time. What advice would you give to a first time investor like that?
Well, as Julian mentioned, I am a safety engineer. So for us, or for me especially, the first and foremost is set your objectives and then know your own risk appetite, because everyone is different. So we, both of us, we don't invest just for the sake of investing or putting our money somewhere. So we've done a lot of research. We set our objectives. We know our risk appetite. And we have a lot of discussions before we make any decisions on what to invest. And we've come to the conclusion for real estate investment, for example, that Japan falls into the lower end of our risk spectrum. So we like that. Mm. Well, especially me, since I am more risk averse than Julian. But yeah, I think Japan is good for us. It's a lower risk, relatively speaking. So that gives us confidence to invest. And yeah, we can sleep well at night without thinking too much about it.
Unless you wake up to go to the toilet. Yeah.
Yeah, when everything is in your hands and you manage and handle everything properly, so it's we're very safe with this. It's but just to add to that, I think it's important setting your own goals and really knowing about your risk tolerance and risk appetite, because that's different from person to person. And also, so that once we had done that, it was really a matter of trying to work out a strategy and how we could get, you know, achieve those goals and really maintain, I suppose, a focus when, you know, we have setbacks or disappointments and so on.
Yep.
So, and the last thing, I suppose, for us has been it's being on top, knowing what your convictions and sometimes trust your own intuitions, because with the Nagoya property deal that we didn't feel very comfortable about this, actually, and then it got us into the wrong direction and we could have missed on the Tokyo deal. So what we've learned from this is really, you know, trust your gut feelings. If you have a conviction about something, then go for it, you know. Mm. If all the lights are green, then it's probably good for you to go. If, you know, you're not so sure about it, you're a bit hesitant, then perhaps it's better to just wait and sit on the side and see what happens. I suppose my last very important piece of advice to all your listeners would be, you know, check your phone at night, because you never know. You never know if Ziv is going to email you the next deal, great deal alert, or, you know, text you. So just be alert.
That is great advice. Thank you for that. And I agree. And I really appreciate it, guys. Thank you for taking the time to speak with us today. Okay, so Mira and Julian, thank you for being on the podcast again. Pleasure speaking with you. And you know, it's really good. I mean, you can't obviously come here for a while now, but when you do, it'll be great seeing you again. You're definitely some of our favorite clients. I'm hoping, I'm hoping this crisis ends sooner rather than later, so you can get together to do some more wining and dining and so forth on your next visit. All right. Well, thank you very much for that, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you, Sue.
Okay, there you have it. I hope you've enjoyed this conversation again as much as I did. I'm biased, of course, but they are pretty lovely, Mira and Julian, aren't they? And really, their experience and personal journey isn't all that different to many of our clients and even ourselves, right? We're just people who, for one reason or another, are a bit more internationally savvy or experienced than others. We've either lived in or regularly visit other countries aside from our own country of origin. So the concept of investing overseas is not alien or frightening for us, which means really that the world is our oyster in a very practical sense. And rather than always play in our own familiar backyard, regardless of the season or economic cycle, we've always got our eyes open for opportunities anywhere in the world, really, as long as they make financial sense. So I hope you found a bit of yourself in their story as well. I know I sure did. And that's it from us for today. So I hope that to have that webinar recreated and recorded for you for our next episode. So watch this space. And while you're watching it, as usual, we would really appreciate it if you could share this episode or the podcast generally with your own networks, spread the good word, hop over to the iTunes store or Spotify or wherever you're tuning in from, and give us a quick click for a star rating or a few words of review if you've got a minute. Just help us reach more people. And until then, from all of us here at NTI, as well as from Mira and Julian in now not so locked down Austria, hope to have you with us next time. Yoroshiku.